For as long as I can remember, I have had a reoccurring dream in which I sit between my parents on the hard, red horsehair pews of my childhood church. I shift and move, trying to make a dent in the old cushions. We are watching the only minister I remember say goodbye. Though each of those details could actually be memory, in the dream, the pews my family and I sit in begin to rise high as if a balcony has been built right in the middle of the congregation. Others begin to fall low as if listening from an orchestral pit, and some pews turn into folding chairs, office seats. One family is at their dining room table right in the middle of the sanctuary. In the dream, I do not move. No one does. We are listening, and we are learning about church and community and paying attention to what happens when we choose one another or don't. My childhood minister was the only one I knew because after his leave, my family and other families left too. Not for him or because of him, but because we, the congregation, were no longer making a church together. Some apparently irreparable something had happened, and we could no longer dream on our future as a people together. And so some left, believed we went higher, placed others lower, and tried our hand at congregational life all on our own. A few years ago, when that childhood church of mine burnt down all the way to the stone basement, leaving nothing but a memorial site, I wept. And when I drove past that darkened earth just a few months ago, seeing it for the first time, rather than imagining it, I scorned at the weeds that grew in its absence. That place and those people hadn't been mine since I was nearly 10 years old. But I have never stopped wanting and wishing we could have fought differently. Fought not about aesthetics or membership numbers or hymn choices or who really knows what any fight is ever about, but instead fought to build a church, a congregation of people, which I have no recollection of them ever attempting to do. Perhaps this is why some part of me is attached to the graphic novel comic book version of the Hanukkah story I have created in my mind. It's a celebration born out of the Talmud, the writings of law and lore given by the early rabbis of Judaism. Now we have, of course, made Hanukkah into some Christian equivalent, Christmas equivalent for where it falls in the calendar year, and as a way to stand tall against the unavoidable commercialized, Americanized presence of Santa. But the Hanukkah, they're from sharing a sentiment with that big-bellied gift giver. It is a lesson in patient but bold resistance, fed-upness, and a claiming of a people's identity and right to exist in the world at any cost. It is a lesson in knowing who your people are and in the threat of erasure fighting to claim them ever more. We recall that the Israelites, living under the rule of the Greek Empire in Judea, had over years endured wave after wave of conquerors, survived exile and restoration. Where our story begins for this holy day, they are in the midst of yet another era of threats. But instead, or still, build a temple to practice their faith within, to keep their practices alive and their people buoyed. Such a visible refusal to conform to the pagan practices of the empire was a promise in genocide. And the Greek army did not turn from the chance to make of them a symbol of their control. And so the temple was the first to be destroyed, physically but also in symbol. The Greek army took the gold cups and dishes used by the high priest, defiled the temple, and killed anyone who tried to stop them. The army then placed in those sacred spaces statues of Greek gods and ordered the Jews to bow to them. Perhaps we should pause here, because I can see it on some of your faces. We know this story, Kim. You've told it before. We recall what the Hanukkah miracle is about. But let me say this. I don't believe, nor would I ever wish to suggest, that there could ever be an equivalent that we might face as Unitarian Universalists, not acutely and certainly not historically. But we might pay attention to our bodies if we were to imagine this place where we gather up our children to sing them a word of peace, this place where we witness to and share our joys and our sorrows, this place where some of you have been married and others have wept at the memorial days of your beloveds. It might serve us well to pay attention to our bodies if we were to imagine this place adorned in, say, Nazi slander, or racist epitaphs, or our chalice used to kindle a fire that took this place from us. The other night, when most of our newest members signed their name to the membership book, one person said to me, "I haven't found a place I could entirely be myself until now." It does feel different, they said, knowing I'm theirs, you all, and that they are mine. And how many of us could say something of the like, not born into this people by heritage or culture, but choosing this place and becoming a people? We have built and are building some shared life together that is salvific, that helps us recognize ourselves, that helps us know who we are and who we can be. I cannot stomach the small and impossible idea that some force could take this place from us in an effort to take us from one another, with a message that who we are and who we are becoming will be made to be inconsequential. One of the priests of the Maccabean Jews, who the Hanukkah story is centered around, would not worship as the soldiers demanded. They struck the old man. And when they did, boy, was that army shocked to receive the village erupt in response. The Israelites tore down the statues and chased the army from town, but then, of course, had to immediately run into hiding. For 3 long years, they hid in caves and hillsides, and using surprise guerrilla warfare tactics, the first of their kind, we believe, they resisted the Greek army one painful victory after another, and eventually took back their homes, and eventually took back their temple. As my colleague, the Reverend Roberta Finkelstein, describes, what they found when they entered the temple grounds was a terrible sight. The doors had been burned, the altar was destroyed, weeds grew in between the stones of the courtyard. Initially, they wept. Then they went to work restoring their holy site. When the temple was ready for use again, people came from all over Judea for a service of dedication. Did you know that the word Hanukkah means dedication? Judas Maccabees searched for jars of sanctified oil to light the temple lamps. He discovered that they had only one small jar, enough for only one evening. They lit the lamp anyway, and it burned miraculously for 8 days and nights. For 8 days and nights, they celebrated, danced, sang, and prayed in gratitude for the restoration of their house of worship. They rededicated themselves to the free practice of their religion. Each year, I have to reread the story of Hanukkah to remind myself, how do we get to the oil and light? It seems like such a small part of the story, a soft and lovely end to a harsh and cruel arc before it. There is wisdom in this that I really rabbis for today, that I understand for the first time this year. For they knew not to emphasize the warfare, the destruction, the way in which the Israelites had to use the same tactics as the empire in order to survive. They would not make this the thing of miracle. They would not mystify the ugliness of war with the soft words of religion or ritual. Instead, they centered the story around a persistent flame, the unexpected well of oil, the way the people returned, not to some perfect house of worship, not to some sinless people without regret or fear or want, but returned to make of one another a people again. Weed by weed pulled, false idols, small fights, remnants of scarcity and fear culled, new notes of gratitude and rituals to remember. As we welcome and celebrate 14 new members into the life of this community today, I let go of my wish that the old childhood church of mine would fight for one another. They fought enough. And today, our 14 new members outnumbers their membership in total. Not a mark of pride, but of grief. Warfare, masked as hope, doesn't need to be a story I give them or hold. Still, I wish they could have built a church, a congregation, a people. Wish they could have wanted it enough, believed in it enough to erupt in claiming one another rather than bowing to their fears. I wish they could have seen and named and ritualized the light that each made possible, like I witness this congregation doing every single day. New members of this community and long-term members of this faith, in you we are reminded that our own chalice light will be ignited for another day. We are reminded of the peoples throughout centuries who have chosen one another, claimed one another, and found light in the gift of their shared life together. We do not know what is to come, for we have been changed by the presence and commitments of these new lights, but we are listening, and we are learning about church and community and paying attention to what happens when we choose one another. As my friend and colleague, Rabbi Aaron Wininger, wrote this week, we live with an incomplete Hanukkah, the Hanukkah lamp, for 7 of the 8 nights of Hanukkah. Perhaps the real miracle of Hanukkah is our being vulnerable enough to feel what our ancestors felt on that first night with that small cruse of oil, not knowing what will be, not having it all figured out. We get to feel that from the moment we light the first candle. There is a moving, a starting, new jobs, seeing a friendship blossom or a relationship that has just begun, coming out, transitioning, taking on a new spiritual practice or diving into a new text, immigrating. What will happen? We don't know. But with each candle, we know we rise in holiness and do not descend as the Talmud teaches. We spend almost all of Hanukkah with an incomplete lamp, but we can spend all of it rising in holy wonder. In the depth of this dark season, lights are like lanterns to the world. Rituals of remembrance and opportunities to celebrate the people with whom we have found a home. Let us give thanks for the early rabbis who teach us still today to harbor on the miracle of a persistent flame and the people who kindled it time and time and time again, weed by weed, want for relationship, a theology of connection from time and for time, if the blessing remains immemorial. for we are also those people. And today, that has grown by a sacred 14. Amen.